Well, hello everyone and welcome back to the Research Talks podcast here from Stockbox with Alan Green and Dan Flynn. Now, we did miss a week last week. It was my fault because I was out at the Swiss Mining Institute in Zurich. And of course, that was a little bit marred by what's going on globally, as we've spoken about before on this podcast, because I left in November. Very bullish. Everyone was very bullish about the sector. And that thesis is very much still intact. But this Iran situation has definitely thrown a spanner in the works, and people are just a little bit unsure what's going on. Markets hate uncertainty, and there was a lot of the bigger sort of funds, for example, were looking into gold, actually holding physical gold, as opposed to or cash. A lot of people were in cash, just waiting. So hopefully it doesn't go on for too long, but the vibe I was getting was that it shouldn't be too long. It should be weeks or just a few months. But regardless, the sort of damage has been done. Oil is probably not going to come back down. But the bull thesis for the commodities, which is, of course, what that conference is all about gold and silver and precious metals and commodities and mining stock, is still very much intact. And Willem Middelkoop said it's only made stronger by this, and it's your last chance to get silver under $100. So that is a nice thing. It's just a shame that this is going on and we have to sort of bide our time and put up with this pain for a little bit. But as me and Dan were talking about with the Robin Hood Dan this morning on the podcast, we haven't really changed our positioning. Well, we haven't, basically. And the Robin Hood chap was saying that the investors, again, are not really changing their positioning. And I think that's a good approach at the moment, just to hold through this. But anyway, did I miss anything? I don't think I missed too much on the markets. Well, actually, it was funny because I think it was day two of the SMI that the markets really did pull back. And I wasn't looking at my portfolio because I was too busy. But there was a few glum faces and people saying, no, just don't look at it. So sometimes ignorance is bliss. but yeah, I don't know. What's it been like, Alan, just for the last sort of week
Bloody, to be fair. I mean, just talking in general terms. And
yeah.
The major stocks, FTSE 100 stocks, funds, everything has taken a real battering. But I think, Trump obviously is backpedaling now on his deals with Iran and the way he's dealing with Iran. And I think he, after the rest of the world pretty much stood firm and said they would not prosecute the war with Iran, Trump realized he was alone and he's now backpedaling and entering talks. So that's a good sign. But we've seen, we're starting to see the impact of that, of course, filter through into the markets. You know, we've got UK retail sales, obviously a big fall in February. Because of the impact on oil and the rising oil price, we're seeing increased interest in green energy because, of course, green energy is the alternative. It's not fueled by oil and, it does create potentially some autonomy for countries that own green energy assets. It's been a mixed bag, but I'm not overly despondent. I think there's upside, and obviously if you have cash, now is a really good time and a good opportunity. Oh, just one bright point, crypto does seem to have had a pretty strong week. I'm into Bittensaw, and that's really come back strongly over the past few days. So yeah, that's it.
Good. Well, I learned a new term in Zurich. Taco. Has anyone heard of taco?
Is that Trumbull?
Well done. Yeah. Yes, it is.
He seems to have prolonged that this time, doesn't he? It would be nice to get some more consistent messaging out of him and indeed Iran. Yeah. I think you're right, though. Ignorance is bliss. Working in the markets and stocks, you can't just switch off your portfolio. You are always aware of what's going on, but it does feel like sometimes it would be easier just to disappear for like a month and come back and see how things are doing on that front. But yeah, I've been adding to some stocks that I've got higher conviction in on the weakness, and it's encouraging to hear you say that at the SMI, people are viewing it as a blip rather than something that's going to affect the longer term bull market, perhaps, because that does mean that on the way up, hopefully those things I've been buying on the way down will have more upside.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, I know. So, yeah, as you say, just, yeah, we have to see how it goes on, how long it goes on for. Yeah, there's a lot of cash waiting. So that's obviously a good thing, right? As soon as certainty comes back, you should see start to redeploy. Okay, well, Alan, you're going to kick us off today with Cadence Minerals, who we've talked about a few times. Things were looking quite good, but there's been some developments there. So please tell us all about it.
Okay, so Cadence currently trading at 4.6p. The company has a market capitalization of just over 19 million. And of course, we spoke about Cadence earlier in the year. The flagship asset is, of course, the Imapa iron ore project, which is a fully integrated iron ore operation in Brazil. It's got an established mine, rail, port, and infrastructure. It's got a JORC compliant mineral resource of 276 million tons at 38% iron. And a proven and probable ore reserve there of 195.8 million tons at 39.34. And the push is very much to develop a green iron asset or a green iron production facility there. And as part of this strategy, they're commissioning an initial production facility called Azteca, which will be producing approximately 380,000 tons of iron ore per year from existing tailings. That'll generate early cash flow support. It'll support ongoing operations and the broader development of the project, and of course all subject to permitting. So we heard sort of earlier this year, I of course have interviewed Kieran several times over the past few months. Very good progress this year. The execution package is in place. Licensing work streams are progressing, and Azteca is basically on track to commence production at the end of June this year, which is really exciting. Now, in terms of valuation, there are sort of several views. I mean, Edison were commissioned to write a research note or reinitiate coverage back at the end of January, and they have basically put a valuation on the Imapa asset of some 1.3 billion. Now, Cadence currently owns 35.7% of the Imapa asset. So that's a value to Cadence of $458 million. That equates to, roughly in today's money, £344 million sterling, or a share price equivalent of about 81p per share. Now, obviously, we're nowhere near that. We're a fraction of that at the moment. But there is a real sense in the market that once production is underway, we're going to start to close that gap very rapidly indeed. Also, broker Zeus, who is the corporate broker to the company, reiterated this week a fair value of 4.6p per share right now, before any upside from the news this week. And this is what has been a real source of interest, I think, for investors in Cadence, who by and large had written off the Sonora Lithium Project asset. And this goes back many, many years. Sonora Lithium Project is a huge asset in the desert in Mexico, in the Sonora Desert. And the Mexican government stepped in and basically took the assets away from Cadence and its partner Ganfeng Lithium. Ganfeng, of course, is the largest lithium company in the world. It's the third largest lithium compound producer in the world. And it's reckoned to be some 8.8 million tons of lithium carbonate at the Sonora asset, with some 4.9 million tons of lithium carbonate on the joint venture areas that involves Cadence. So the Mexican government have taken the assets back. Now, we've seen quite a few examples over the past few years of companies hiring lawyers and litigating against governments and winning. And indeed, one case we've discussed quite regularly here on the podcast is that of Greenex Metals. And Greenex, of course, owns the Tannenberg copper project in Germany, has some assets in Greenland too, but they also have a legacy asset in Poland, which is the old Jankarski coal mine. And the Polish government took that back, and Greenex hired a litigation funding company, successfully litigated. The Polish government tried to overturn that ruling at the Singapore Court of Commerce. Singapore Court of Commerce rejected the application. And this week we've had an initial payment of $1.6 million from the Polish government to GreenX Metals. So that's just one example of a series of litigation results that have taken place over the past few years. So this is very much the latest in that line. And I'm pretty bullish about the opportunity here. The Sonora does have a significant value for Cadence, but although it's not a core part of the investment case, it adds significant value in that there is now the prospect of some sort of repayment from the Mexican government to Cadence and Ganfeng. And of course, the finance that the company has entered into is with LCM Funding. They will fund the due diligence. And of course, it's a no-win, no-fee scenario. And LCM Funding, who are providing the finance, will of course take a chunk of the money should they be successful in the long run. But of course, all of this is taking place under the UK-Mexico bilateral investment treaty. It means that Cadence can pursue its legal claims without impacting either on shareholders, on the value of the company, or most importantly, its balance sheet. So operationally, it can focus on Azteca, but you've got this bit of blue sky in the background, which potentially, if that goes through, there's a chunk of extra money that's going to come into the company. So, you know, at the current valuation, it's an absolute no-brainer, I think. $19 million, 4.6p, and that's against a potential value from Edison of some 81 pence per share.
Good, excellent. So, yeah, I mean, you've been following this for a while, so it's good to see progress being made on a few fronts there, finally. So hopefully, yeah, and of course, it's iron, right? So yeah. There's not many sort of pure sort of iron ore plays like that. I know we were speaking to Orson.
No, that's another interesting one, definitely.
Yeah. Solid investment always going to be required. Okay, good. Thanks, Alan. So, Dan, can you talk to us about critical mineral resources then and what Charlie's up to?
Yeah, I wanted to come back to CMR, which I actually highlighted as one of my picks for the year back in December. At the time, I thought the company looked undervalued relative to what it was delivering operationally. Now, fast forward a few months, and not only has the company continued to hit key milestones, but the share price is actually down around 20% since the start of the year, now trading at around 2.2p, giving it a market cap of roughly 7.5 million. So if anything, that disconnect between progress and valuation has widened. First, if we just run through what's happened since we last covered the company, the story is pretty straightforward. Things are moving in the right direction. The Agadir Malul copper silver project in Morocco, the company has continued to deliver strong drilling results. We've seen shallow copper mineralization confirmed across multiple zones, including grades like 10 meters at 1.1% copper from surface alongside silver and gold credits. And yeah, importantly, this is all near surface material, which obviously has those positive implications for the economics. Operationally, the company has also taken more control of its program. It's now running its own company-owned diamond drill rig, which Charlie highlighted when I spoke to him last week. That gives them greater flexibility, lower costs, and the ability to move faster as they scale up drilling. And we're now seeing that in practice with two rigs operating, two shifts a day, and a clear plan to ramp up to around 20 holes a month. Top of that, the company has secured a mining license for the project's initial planned open pit mine. And that's a big step because it moves the project beyond just exploration and firmly into the development pathway. So the latest update, which came out, it was either last week or the week before, continues that momentum. The key takeaway for me being that the company is now working towards a very clear development timeline. The plan is to tick off metallurgical processing and geotechnical milestones by August before delivering a maiden JRC mineral resource estimate in September, mine planning in October, November, and DFS completion and plant EIA approval in December. That's incredibly fast, and it means production's basically expected to be early next year, I think. When you step back and look at it, this isn't an open-ended exploration story now. This is a company moving along a defined pathway towards production. And as Charlie said to me in the interview, the focus right now is very much on building that initial mine case using that near surface material. But importantly, that's only one part of the story, because beyond that initial open pit mine, there is much broader upside across the wider project area. I mean, Charlie was very clear on that. This is not just a single small deposit. That's the initial target. And beyond that, there's like kilometers of strike and the potential to expand well beyond the initial zones currently being focused on. And on top of that, Charlie alluded to the fact that there's also potential for further deals and additional growth opportunities in Morocco, where the company has a strong in-country experience. So I think really the market's already undervaluing the company heavily on what is already defined and moving towards production, in my opinion. And there's clearly much more upside potential beyond that embedded in the broader strategy. So you bring it all together, and what we have is a company that's, you know, continued to deliver strong drilling results, secured a license, scaled up its drilling capacity, laid out a clear pathway. And yet, despite all that progress, it's still sitting on a market cap of just £7.7 million. And I think what's important here is the timing. Over the next few months, there's a clear sequence of catalysts. We'll have the results, that resource model, the estimate, and all the other things I mentioned. And these are the kind of milestones that tend to shift how the market values the company, because you move from exploration to something a bit more tangible. There's some figures and you can look forward to how value will actually be created. And I think that's what investors might be waiting for to pull the trigger. So if those milestones come through as expected, it becomes much easier for investors to benchmark the project against peers and assign a more appropriate valuation. Of course, execution is everything from here. The key will be delivering that resource estimate on schedule, delivering on all those other milestones, and continuing to demonstrate the scale and economics of the project as well as looking at those new opportunities, perhaps. If the company does deliver on the timeline is set out, I think you would expect the market to start taking a much closer look at what's being built here, and that perhaps will be to the benefit of people who are positioned early. I personally hold a position, so I hope that's the case.
Yeah, indeed. We've spoken about critical minerals before, and we like what they're doing, don't we? And we're actually doing a podcast with Charlie Long next week, so we'll get to learn a bit more about the man behind the company. So I'm looking forward to that. But thank you for giving us your take, and you're doing that with me, Dan, so we can probe Charlie a little bit on his plans and what he wants to achieve at the project and the company. Okay, absolutely. Good. So, Alan, then, we're back to you for Beeks Financial Cloud Group.
Beeks Financial Cloud Group. BKS is the epic code. AIM-listed company. Shares have traded as high as 272p on the year and as low as 160p. And we're just off that low now at 165p, giving the company market capitalization of just on £113 million. Now, BKS are recognized as leaders in the fintech landscape, and they provide infrastructure as a service for to financial exchanges around the world. And these are the world's top exchanges. They have the big exchange cloud now live with the Nasdaq. They have a group of Bolsa Mexicana de Valores, which is the second largest exchange in Latin America, as a client, and a series of other exchanges as part of their network. So they provide that they just allow financial transactions to occur at incredible speed. They, as with any business like this, they've spent many years building the infrastructure and the network behind it. They now have 22 different data centers around the world, and of course they've got that 24/7 network and support. The data centers are located in New York, Paris, London, Chicago, Singapore, Frankfurt, Sydney, Hong Kong, multi million pounds transactions pass through these exchanges every few minutes. So it's a very important business. The company has spent the past year migrating a lot of its business to what it refers to as proximity cloud, or the proximity exchange cloud. And as a result of that, the billing has changed slightly. And if we look at the chart for the year, we've seen a fairly consistent consistent share price performance between £1.90 and £2.70 a share. And then literally in the run-up to the interim results, which were announced a week or so ago, we've seen the share price fall quite substantially. And I think there's a real opportunity here. And the reason for that is, I'm going to come to in a second. Just point of note, and I think you'll remember this, guys. The chief executive is a fellow called Gordon MacArthur. He set the business up in 2011. He's still at the helm and holds 32.6% of the shares. And I think, you know, if you're going to invest in the business, and you've got a CEO that's built a business like this, it's a pretty safe bet. And the fact that they're changing tack and moving to an exchange cloud to basically improve efficiencies and just improve the performance of the business, that then you can bet he's going in the right direction. So in the interims, they announced to the end of December, they record revenues at what they refer to as annualized monthly recurring revenues. These rose 15% to 32.8 million. New contracts were up 23% to just under 12 million. But due to contract timings and also this move to a revenue share on the exchange cloud model, the first half numbers were impacted. Revenues were down to 14.6 million for the first half. Down from 15.7 million previously, and similar falls in gross profit and EBITDA too. But what it's done is provided really strong visibility for the second half. The group ended the half year with cash of 7 million in the bank and no debt, and that's down from 7.3 million previously. So pretty much where it is. So there are now 7 exchanges using the Exchange Cloud. 2 new wins in the first half of 2026. TMX Group, based in Canada, and Nuam launched their services on the Exchange Cloud. Along with that, they've launched an AI-powered market intelligence operation. And the outlook is really, really strong. And the reason I think it's worth looking at the company at this stage is because due to that delayed revenue, they already have £4.5 million worth of revenues from the first half of the year going into the second half. So that's on top of whatever else they're going to generate. They've also got multiple significant contracts under negotiation and close to closing out. And they expect their full year to be in line, and they see a significant addressable opportunity in all their markets entering the second half with very strong momentum. So I think given this drop off, you look at the share price performance over the previous year, it's been very consistent. This move to an exchange cloud has to some degree cost the company, but I think it's also provided an opportunity for investors who are looking at this company to get in and buy in at this level, because I fully expect it to go back to where it was and probably higher as the second half of the year progresses.
Okay, good. Thank you, Alan. Well, Dan, let's finish off with something completely different. I know you spoke to them for the first time today. So they're into psychedelics over where I live in the Netherlands.
Absolutely, yeah. So this is a company I learned about recently called Red Light. And it's not, like you say, not one we've covered before, but I actually spoke to the CEO, Todd Shapiro, earlier this week. And I thought it was interesting enough that it was worth doing a quick introduction, because this, like you say, very different type of company to what we usually look at, and with a current market cap of just 7 million Canadian dollars, it could be an interesting one to keep on the radar, particularly if that psychedelics sector is operating and continues to develop. So just a word on psychedelics: still an early and evolving space, but it's increasingly being looked at for applications in mental health, depression, PTSD and addiction. And importantly, what we're seeing is a gradual shift, not just in research, but in how regulators and governments are starting to approach these substances. Now, what makes Red Light interesting is the way it's positioned itself within that space, because it's not just a biotech story and it's not just a commercial story, but it's actually doing both at the same time. So on the commercial side, the company is already generating revenue for the sale of legal psilocybin truffles in the Netherlands, psilocybin being the active ingredient. This is a fully legal market, and Red Light operates through retail distribution, including over 125 smart shops in the Netherlands. So this is a real business selling actual products into a legal market today, not just talking about potential future demand. And beyond that, the company also has a broader mushroom and consumer products platform. So it sells things like home grow kits and functional mushrooms. So these aren't psychedelic, across North America and Europe, with distribution partnerships, including major retailers. So there's a wider commercial ecosystem being built here as well. It's not just a single product line on those truffles. In terms of numbers, the company reported around $1.26 million of quarterly revenue in its most recent update, with total revenues now exceeding $12.5 million since listing. So again, not pre-revenue biotech. It's already operating and generating cash flow. But what really caught my attention when speaking to Todd is that the building on top of that, because alongside that commercial business, Red Light is now expanding into psychedelic drug development. And this is, to me, where things get more interesting. The company has signed a deal to acquire and work with another company called Filament Health, which brings with it a large IP portfolio, including 76 issued patents across natural psilocybin technologies. And at the center of that is a drug candidate called PEX-010. This is a botanical psilocybin formulation designed for clinical use. And importantly, it's already being supplied to over 70 clinical research sites globally. So this isn't really early stage, really early stage lab work. It's already being used in real clinical settings. And then on top of that, Red Light is also layering in AI-driven clinical development tools. They've partnered with a company called Kala Bio's platform to help optimize trial designs, simulate outcomes, and accelerate development timelines. So, you know, just bring it all together, this is a company that is generating revenue today from legal products while building exposure to a pharmaceutical pipeline with global clinical reach, as well as using AI to potentially speed up that process. That combination's rare in this space because most companies are either on the biotech side or on the commercial side. Red Light's trying to bridge that gap. And as Todd said to me when I spoke to him, this isn't about pivoting away from the commercial business, but just building another layer of upside on top of it as that regulatory environment continues to evolve. So there's a few key things to look out for from here for me. There's the continued growth on the commercial side, progress on that filament company integration and the development of PEX-010, and broader developments in the regulatory environment generally across the world. Now, of course, this isn't without risk. This is still an early stage sector, and a lot depends on how that regulation evolves. But if you believe in the long-term potential of psychedelics, you want something a bit different in your portfolio, then this is an interesting way to get exposure. And at just 7 million market cap, if that broader trend does continue to grow and the company's strategy starts to play out, then this could be one of those stories that, you know, that moves quite quickly when there's a bit of interest that returns to the sector. So yeah, I'm putting it on my watch list. I haven't invested yet, but I really like the idea of it, and it's something I'm going to keep following.
It's different, isn't it? Do you get a sense of where they want to sort of grow and take the business? Is it more down the medicinal route in sort of not Netherlands jurisdictions?
Yeah, I think the commercial business will continue. They are continuing to try and build their presence there. And, you know, if more markets open up, then they're going to have a first mover advantage because they're already established. But I think probably in the more near to medium term, the clinical side is where the real opportunity lies. Because, I mean, a few years ago, we saw a number of psychedelic companies emerge to try and make something of the fact that the psilocybin was increasingly being used in these medical contexts. And that's continuing and it's in advancing. Mm. And I think the company, is making the best of that. And it also has that commercial side to mean it's not entirely reliant on external sources of funding. It's also got an internal self-funding source.
Yeah, absolutely. Alan, do you have any thoughts on this?
Well, it's a new market, isn't it? And I think I think there was a company we discussed a while back that were engaged in this marketplace, and obviously nothing came of it. But I think I think it's a significant market, and I think it's one that's worth looking at. Of course, we've seen the evolution of CBD and that market, and of course Nick Tulloch pivoted Voyager Life into Mendel Helium. So and there's still a good business operating there, and this is another dimension of that business. I'd probably venture so far as to say. So yeah, I think it warrants a look and an examination. But of course, when you've got regulatory issues around the world, where the drugs can be used, that's always going to limit the market. But for me, I say jury's out.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're right. Mm-hmm. I mean, the regulatory risk is big here. It does put a ceiling on things, but it's kind of one, isn't it? I like investing in good stories, and I think this one's got a really interesting new market. And if it does open up, and I mean, I can't guarantee that, obviously, but if it does, then it would be good to be in there early, wouldn't it? And I think this company is a pretty strong offering within that space.
Yeah, I think if you're an entrepreneur and you're looking to get into new markets, then this is definitely worth a punt. It's one to tuck away. Obviously, you don't know how it's going to evolve, but it's got that appeal, certainly.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, thank you everyone for your time. I'm sure we'll be hearing a bit more about all of the companies, but particularly this Red Light, which is a little bit different. But thank you, and enjoy your weekends, and let's see what next week brings.
Thanks, guys. Have a good weekend.
Cheers, guys.
Okay. If you enjoyed this interview, then give us a thumbs up, a like, or a retweet. Subscribe to us on YouTube or follow us on Twitter, and hit that notification bell to be the first to know when we release new content. There's loads of great content on our website too, across all our programmes at stockboxmedia.com. Thank you for watching.